Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for Triad Today, a weekly community affairs program on 98.7 Simon. I'm Charlie, your host. Suicide has a history of being a taboo subject to talk about, whether it's discussing someone who lost their life to suicide or talking about personal suicidal thoughts. Many people speak about it in hushed tones or try to brush it under the rug and ignore it. Suicide also has a stigma of religious and social shame attached to it. But the best way to prevent suicide is to bring it out into the light and talk about it. That's why September has been designated National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, and why I've asked Juan Santos of Santos Counseling in Greensboro to join me this morning for our program. Good morning, Juan.
Good morning. Good morning.
Juan, you know, people die in a variety of different manners every day, and usually if you're asked about it, we'll say, well, he died of a heart attack or she was in a car accident. But when it comes to suicide, it seems we clam up. What are some of the reasons that people are so reluctant to talk about a death by suicide?
You know, I think you hit on one earlier, just that being that stigma connected to it. And, you know, even now us having this conversation, like this is not a typical dinner with family conversation. You know, we're even told not to talk about politics, right, during dinner or social gatherings. So it could stir things up. And I think because it's still a topic that is not brought out into the light, it kind of keeps it in the background. And that means the individual is left in the background on their own to deal with it. So I'm glad, you know, I'm really happy that you and I are here and we're talking about this topic, because I think that in itself, hopefully for listeners, if they're whether struggling with suicidal thoughts or negative thoughts, are able to say, hey, someone's talking about it, and maybe that can, you know, be that nudge that I need to work with a therapist or share it with somebody in my support system.
For those of us who have maybe never had suicidal thoughts or seriously considered ending our own lives, it just seems like such an extreme decision. Can you help us understand some of the thoughts or feelings a suicidal person might be having?
Good question. There's a lot of places that we could start here. You know, I think if we look at like the clinical space of mental health, there's clinical depression. Average term out there, depression. I feel depressed. And with that comes certain symptoms. And some of the common symptoms that we see could be withdrawal, isolation, negative thoughts, such as I'm never going to get any better. No one likes me. And what happens often with these symptoms is that if they're not treated, that they can grow. And that would be no different than if you have a cut on your hand and you don't treat it, over time it can get infected, and that could really worsen. And you know, at that point, if it's worsening, then you're looking at how do I deal with it at that point. So when it comes to suicide, that's one area. Another could be spaces connected to where we're at in life. You know, if you're a 10-year-old kid out there, most people have a phone everywhere they go. You know, I remember growing up and I'd go to school and things were left there. Whereas now, you know, you're 10 years old, you don't get invited to a birthday party. And then you go home and you see everybody's having fun. And then you go into, how does that make me feel? And if it doesn't make you feel the way that you're wanting to feel, maybe you go into a dark tunnel. And that could lead to, first, just negative thoughts. And then from there, those could grow. And again, there's so many examples here. I share that one just so that we can kind of take a step back and say, okay, that makes sense. I can see how it could start from a negative thought, as an example, and that can grow into something a little bit more powerful.
I've also heard that a lot of times, you know, I had a friend who's had a daughter who was battling depression, and she was trying to talk to her about it. And she was saying, you know, one of the things people who are on the outside might say, well, how could you do this to me? And they'll say, it's not about you. what I'm feeling and what I'm thinking that might, I think it might be better for everyone. Isn't that something that a lot of times happens?
Yeah, it is. And you said that, you know, in one unique way, and there's so many other, you know, disclosures that come in different formats. So using that one, you know, maybe that individual was looking for validation, not validation in respect to, yes, you know, you should end your life, but validation as far as, you know, how did you get here? You know, I want to hear, I want to be here with you and why you're feeling the way that you're feeling. And if the parent or that person does not do that and goes into the other direction as far as how could you do this to me, you're almost robbing the person of what they're feeling. If we replace suicide with kid gets home and they have a bad day, but it's your birthday as a parent, and then you tell the kid, hey, you know, quiet that down. It's my birthday. How could you do this to me on my birthday? And I get there are two different examples, but you could see how if we don't sit with that person, with our child, with that individual in that moment, that's going to make them feel a certain way. So we kind of weigh the option. Do I sit with you so we can work through it? Or do I focus it on how could you do this to me? And again, Charlie, I comprehend the part of, you know, if someone's ending their life, there's a support system, right? There's so many people around them that love and care for this individual. So I do see that connection as far as if you end your life, how could you do this to me? Because it's going to impact them, correct?
Mm-hmm. Many people battle depression in silence. They're afraid of being shamed or told to just get over it. So let's talk a little bit about what clinical depression really is and how it affects a person's day-to-day life.
Clinical depression, as shared earlier, has these symptoms. And the symptoms come from what's called the Diagnosis Statistical Manual. So it's this big, giant book that you're carrying. It's like that Harry Potter book, if you've ever seen the Harry Potter films. And in there, you've got all these diagnoses. And then there's symptoms that go under it. So when we talk about depression, we're looking at symptoms as far as low energy, low motivation, a shift in mood. It could be irregular appetite, where maybe you're not hungry or you're eating a little bit too much. It could be irregular sleep, even insomnia, where you're just not getting enough sleep. It could be where you literally feel that you're not able to do a task. At times I work with patients with clinical depression, and we're working on, let's say, being able to make their bed. And they'll say, Juan, I don't even have the energy to get out of bed. And for someone on the outside, it could be like, you know what? You don't have the energy to get out of bed? But what's happening is that the individual is sharing something with you. Like they are telling you that is exactly how they feel. No different than if you're out there listening and you've done a leg day of squats and the next day you wake up and you're like, man, I can't barely walk. You know, to a degree, you see that relationship there. Mm-hmm. There's other symptoms that connect to depression, and they go into more of the mindset where there could be negative thoughts. And these negative thoughts connect to low self-esteem, to low self-worth, to low self-confidence. So with those symptoms there, it could really range on how it could affect their life. Let's say if someone's struggling with clinical depression and their sleep is off, kind of think about your life. You know, think about days where you didn't sleep well. You probably wake up and you're tired. And if you're tired, you're not showing up 100%. Or let's say that, you know, you go to work and you apply for a promotion, but you don't get it. So then you feel bad and then you have negative thoughts, right? So both of those are symptoms of clinical depression. And then imagine that just consistently, like you're feeling that way. More than likely, that's going to weigh down on you, and it could impact your ability to show up in relationships. Most importantly, your ability to show up for yourself.
I'm speaking with Juan Santos of Santos Counseling about suicide prevention awareness. Juan, do people who are seriously considering suicide usually tell people?
That is a very good question. This is more of experience through clinical practice, working with patients, experience with colleagues, sitting down with different psychologists, therapists, associates in the community, and being a nerd on research. I think that I've learned that individuals share it, maybe not in the most direct way. You know, there are cases of working with a patient and they say, Juan, you know, I'm thinking about killing myself. And we have to go and we have to work through that process. And there's other cases where there's disclosures shared that aren't as direct as I want to kill myself. It's, you know, Juan, I don't see a purpose to all of this, to what I'm doing. You know, are we just supposed to wake up and keep, you know, working for this job that's going to give us money? And like, why even do all of that? Or, you know, some individuals may share, I didn't ask to be here. You know, I get my parents, you know, wanted a child, but now I got to be here. Now I got to take all this responsibility. and the weight of the world. And, you know, at one point I gotta get married, then I have the child, and I gotta check every other list that everyone's checking. That's just so much, right? So individuals often share thoughts connected to suicide or the intent of suicide, I've learned, in different ways. And it's up to us, you know, just like when we're there with a friend, when we sit and we actually intentionally listen, like we actively listen and we're there. And clinicians, you know, often through our training in school, we're pushed and nudged to do that. So hopefully everyone listening, you know, if you have somebody in your life, be able to take a step back and say, okay, what are they saying? And why are they saying it? That can help us increase our awareness of what's going on the lives of those around us.
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, people, when this happens, people will be like, oh, I had no idea he was feeling that way because he didn't flat out say it. But there might have been signs. There might have been things they said. What are some of the signs we can look for in our friends and family?
Some of the common signs are withdrawal. So let's say if you have a friend, whether it's a child, a spouse, an older adult, and they used to, you know, do certain social activities, whether they went to the country club or, you know, your child was getting online playing video games and you saw that pattern for a while, but then all of a sudden you don't see that pattern. That's where we kind of want to figure out why. You know, usually when we remove ourselves from environments that were fun or pleasurable, it's like this light bulb, because typically we go into environments that are fun or pleasurable so that we feel good and that we get some sort of something out of it, if you will. But if we remove ourselves, we kind of go, why? Why would a person want to remove themselves from something that typically would be pleasurable and fun for them? That's one sign there. Another sign, a little more common, is when we start to see physical actions take place. Physical actions as far as cutting. And let's say, you know, right now we are, we're in fall. But let's just kind of rewind back and say we're in summer and it's really hot. And then you see somebody outside with a long sleeve shirt. We kind of get curious of why this individual has a long sleeve shirt when it's really hot outside. And this is a guess, so that could be completely wrong. But it may be because the individual is engaging in self-harm. Maybe they're cutting their wrist and they don't want other people to see it. So that's a sign there where potentially something is taking place. And as parents, as the support system, we kind of just want to be aware and ask those questions.
But knowing what to say to someone who's battling depression and having suicidal thoughts, that can be so difficult. Can you tell us a few things that could be helpful and definitely what not to say?
Yeah, definitely what not to say is get over it.
Yeah.
Or grow up. Or you don't have it that bad. There's people in third world countries that have got it way worse. Or I don't care. Again, didn't we just pay thousands of dollars for all these therapists and rehab centers? What are we doing here? Right. So those are statements that, you know, whether you feel that way or not, we want to pull those back, reel that back and try something a little bit different. Try something that dances with compassion, with kindness, with help me understand. There's so many things in this world that we do not know. And when we remove judgment and criticism, we're left with help me understand. So share that if you find yourself in a position where you're just not sure how to help. Place yourself in that position, whether it's with a child, a spouse, a sibling, whoever that person may be, and say, hey, help me understand how I can be here for you. I'm a little bit lost, but I want to know.
And one of the things that I've noticed is that at any time, anyone could consider ending their life by suicide. But it seems the motivations may be very different for teens and young adults than for older adults. So let's talk about teens and young adults first, because suicide is the second leading cause of death for them. As parents, siblings, and friends, what should we look for and how can we reach out?
You know, I was looking at that same statistic and I saw that over time since, I think, when I was looking at the data from the National Institute of Mental Health from 1999 to now, it's just kind of going up through all those ages. It's, as far as what we look for teens and young adults, as far as motivators, it's being able to take a step back and acknowledge the life that they're living. Earlier when we started the interview, I shared that example of a child or a teen or young adult going to school and not being invited to a party. So technology, you know, technology, whether it's social media, there's a lot of pressure there. A lot of pressure as far as, you know, how skinny should I be? How tall should I be? How strong should I be? How can I fit in? Trying to become something maybe that we're not, you know, often those become these indirect or direct nudges that can push an individual to engage in thoughts or experience thoughts of low self-esteem, low self-worth, that can then grow into suicidal thoughts of not wanting to be present, be alive, because they don't like what's happening in their life during that moment.
And for kids, that's something that we have a hard time putting ourselves in their place as adults, because we know that, you know, you have a breakup, life goes on. You didn't get invited to her birthday party. Well, guess what? When you grow up, you're going to be way more successful than she was anyway, or things like that. You know, we can see that as adults. And so sometimes we have a hard time feeling what the kids are feeling, that this is their world. You know, they liked this girl at school and she turned him down, and to him, he is crushed. And so we have to find ways to talk to them, not just, you'll get over it, you'll meet another girl, you know, that kind of stuff. We have to kind of find ways to relate to them and what they're actually going through at the time.
Exactly. Beautifully put. You know, being able to relate, to sit with them, to ask them, you know, how they're feeling and why they're feeling the way that they're feeling. You know, if there's anything that we can do to support them. If possible, you know, often our experiences as parents with what our kids are going through are a little bit different, just based on how times change. But allowing yourself to dig into that memory of maybe experiences that you've had that's somehow related. There's the author Brené Brown. She's a social worker, I believe. Has a lot of books out there on vulnerability. And she gives this example where I think her daughter was going through some challenging issues at school. So she kind of just stopped and said, you know what, that sucks. And she was able to relate with her on a different example. But that lets your child know that you see them. If we skip to, you know what, you know, if I skip to with my son, if I say, you know what, Alex, don't even worry about that, because you're going to be so much more successful. I am also skipping over how he feels. And how a person feels is often what leads to thoughts and to feelings and into actions, the actions of suicide, you know, what we're talking about here. So by skipping over it and providing this really grand act of, you know what, you're going to be successful, it skips over all of those really core details that we're trying to discuss here.
We need to just put ourselves there with them at the moment and just help them get through it day by day and help them realize, you know, hey, you know what, let's wait and see how you feel tomorrow, kind of thing. And kind of, you know, just let each day go by, and then eventually they'll be like, oh, wait, I do feel better. But you've got to be with them right there in the moment.
Exactly. And kind of tying into that, advocacy, I think this relates to kids, teens, young adults. And then I know we're going to transition into older adults, you know, advocacy, being able to step in and say, how can I support, whether you're a parent going into the school to talk with a teacher, talk with a guidance counselor.
Or even speak to the other kids' parents if it's, you know, if you're in a situation where you feel like you can do that, if it's something that can just, you know, a lot of times parents don't know that their kid said something mean to another kid, and they'll be as appalled by it as you are. And so they, you know, if you can speak to them and possibly, you know, help to make the situation a little bit better, it could really make a big difference.
Yes. Yep. Exactly.
Juan Santos of Santos Counseling is my guest on the show this morning. And Juan, what are some of the different issues that older adults who may be dealing with, and they may be considering, you know, just ending their lives, and how can we reach out to them?
You know, I find this one sometimes is not, I guess, as publicly shared or spoken about as younger individuals. You know, there's even the film on Netflix, 13 Reasons Why, that really digs into youth. With older adults, I think what, as far as work experience and what I've learned through time, I've seen religion to be a key one. Religion in respect to, you know, if you think about your religious background, what's the view on it? And if there's a view that says just black and white, no, then we're kind of left with our feelings of, well, I still feel this way. And we then keep it to ourselves, and we keep things to ourselves. It bubbles. It's just kind of the way it is. It starts to be really heavy. And the heavier it is, the harder it is for us to carry. And that could lead to the act itself, a suicide. Another one with older adults is the stigma. You know, now mental health, and I love how mental health is something that it seems like the stigma is being removed more and more with the younger generation. I see shirts out there that says, be kind, or mental health is cool. And I'm like, I love that. And I remember growing up in a house, and, you know, my parents didn't speak about mental health like that. I come from a Latin, Hispanic background. So mental health was, you know, tú eres loco. And what that means is you are crazy. And mm-hmm. if you're listening and if you're from the Latino background, maybe that connects to you. But of course, we know that we're not crazy. These are just generational patterns, you know, that at some point we try to shift out of. So when it comes to older adults, I think what's helpful is taking a step back and saying, what are the stigmas that connect to suicide? And how can I find a healthy support system for me that may be outside of the generation space that I'm in?
Yes. For older adults, you know, of course, you know, all the stigmas that you said, no one, especially men, I think, you know, they don't like to talk about their feelings. They don't like to tell people. They don't want to be perceived as being weak. But there, you know, there's so many things in our lives, the stresses, the financial stresses, the just stress of your family, stress of if you want to stay in your marriage or not, those type of things. And I even know someone, husband of a friend, who was dealing with these painful health issues for quite a long time and couldn't see a way out of that. So there's lots and lots of different reasons, you know, and that is something we do hear about teen suicide a whole lot, but we don't hear as much about the older people, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever. And but it's still out there and it's still something that, you know, as friends and family, we need to keep an eye out for and pay attention to.
Correct. Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. Maybe as adults and older adults, we kind of shift to this mentality where we're supposed to know what we're doing. Like we're supposed to have our life, you know, together. Mm-hmm. And you laugh, which is great because I think that's beautiful. I think it shows that it's okay if we don't. Whereas with kids, you know, we talk about youth. Maybe that's why there's more of that conversation around suicide, because maybe we as adults say it's okay that they don't know or have their life together. So it could lead to blank. And you mentioned really key ones, you know, as far as you're getting older, your kids, your family expectations, and whether that's nuclear with your spouse, or if you come from a family line where you're expected to be a certain person and having to live up to that, job pressure, money, divorce, and having to create that new identity. That's often one that individuals don't stop and talk a lot about, where, you know, you're married and that becomes your identity. And if and at one point you separate and now you're like, who am I? And that could be very heavy. And if you're left alone with that weight, that could lead to negative thoughts, which again could spiral into suicidal thoughts.
The pandemic has caused a flare-up in mental illness issues. It has enhanced some of the difficulties for those who are already dealing with issues, but it's even brought some new issues to some of us who've never felt like we had anything going on before. And now we're just like, why do I feel like this? I'm not happy. I can't get out of this funk, whatever. Have you seen an increase in people coming to your practice wanting to talk these things out?
Yeah, we have. And we've seen that across the board too, just with other therapists. And psychiatrists or mental health offices that we're in contact with. I think, you know, certainly there's a lot of reasons why. One of the ones I'd like to share here is the removal of supportive resources. You know, so prior to the pandemic, you have a stressful day, you go to your local gym and that makes you feel good. Or you go to a bar and hang out with some friends and talk about what took place and so forth. So many of these places that we're able to just unload. And with the pandemic, you remove that and you're left to figure out, well, where do I go? How do I unload? And if we don't find a healthy alternative, then we hold on to all those things that we're letting go of. And that's a lot of weight, a lot of pressure. And then that could, you know, that could nudge us towards finding ourselves in a counseling office, which is not a negative thing.
No, the good thing about the pandemic is it has brought an increased desire to talk about it. And it's helped to remove some of the stigma, because it seems like, you know, we're all in this. We're all battling some difficult moments. And, we, you know, people are starting to put that out there so that everybody doesn't feel so alone. That's been pretty helpful, hasn't it?
Yeah, you know, I've certainly loved that. Love seeing it. And we in the mental health field have been pushed a lot to provide services face-to-face and online now, which I have found people just to adore. Like, you know, being able to text your therapist or I'll have patients and they're like, let's do a video session. All of this is, of course, secure and HIPAA compliant, but it gives you that access where I'm a parent and sometimes I am just tired when I get off work. And then I got to go pick up my kids from whether it's school or some program, and then having to then go to see my therapist. And I love seeing my therapist, but you know, just that travel, it could be it could be a little extra. So now with the pandemic, I think opening up those doors to say there's access, and you could text, you could email, you could do video sessions. I found that to be very helpful for a lot of individuals.
Again, especially for older people, therapy has almost been considered a luxury. It's something that, you know, it's like, you know, you like getting your nails done, but it's one of those things that's kind of at the bottom of your list of things that you have to pay for. People think it's costly, that it's for celebrities, that, you know, regular people can't afford therapy. Is that an accurate assessment today, or are there options?
I think there's options. There's a lot of options. There are social media, right? So there is social media where a lot of therapists, and I like to get on there too on my own, where we have channels. Not as popular, of course. It's like a Netflix or HBO. But when we get on there, we talk about different topics. And it's pro bono, it's free. So I'll share about, you know, depression symptoms, or how to navigate challenges in your relationship. Just because I know that A, it's fun, like I love doing it, and B, it's supportive. You know, sometimes people just may be tight with expenses, or they may not be ready to take that step to go see a therapist. It's a big step. So having those resources there for free, I think that's one that provides that access. Another is influencers. There's a lot of individuals like on Instagram where they'll be on there and they'll do the same thing. They'll do videos, a lot of infographics where they share, you know, 5 ways to reduce bipolar symptoms, or, you know, try this if you're feeling down. And then I find those helpful as well. As a fun little tip, if you do have insurance, most insurance plans do support you with your mental health coverage. And there's also something called an EAP, an Employment Assistance Program, which most employers typically have this. And it gives you as a employee in that organization, free counseling, as long as your organization has that. And typically it's like 3 to about 12 sessions where you can do for free. So those are a couple of options there that individuals can use. Some therapists as well, what they do is they will shift their fees depending on the type of service. So instead of, let's say, a 1 hour face-to-face, they may do a 20 or 30 minutes video session, or, you know, work with you using a secure text platform. That way it's a little less expensive or more cost effective, and then you're able to use your time a little more effective.
Okay, so if you are considering therapy or you think it might be something that's good for you, get out there and just start doing some research, because there are plenty of different options for you. Juan, what final words would you like to share with our listeners about suicide awareness for themselves and for their loved ones?
I'd like to share, you know, gratitude for you, Charlie, for having the space for everyone else to be able to hopefully allow this subject to come out of the shadows, you know, to come out of the dark and be something that we're open and comfortable without judgment and criticism to speak on. If you are someone out there and you're struggling with negative thoughts, suicidal thoughts, see if you're able to connect with a clinician near you. Often what they have are like safety plans. And safety plans are pretty simple and to the point. They walk you through like a step-by-step system of what to do when you are having those type of thoughts, and then how to transition out of them. And that could be just one session. You know, if you're really, whether it's tight on money or not fully ready for that experience, you know, one session allows you to go in and get some of the tools that you need. I feel like I could answer this question for hours and hours. maybe we'll stop there.
Yeah. And for people who are... One thing I do want to point out is that a lot of times when a death by suicide happens, the survivors are left feeling a whole lot of guilt. So what would you have to say to people like that?
Yeah, that's certainly a heavy topic and a heavy feeling. If you find yourself in a position like that, I want to encourage looking for a resource. You know, there's grief counseling that walks individuals through healthy stages, all the way to acceptance. Being able to take a step back and evaluate your support system, you know, ensuring that you have people around you that are supporting you in the grief process versus maybe removing that from you based off what took place. There's a lot of clinicians in most areas that specialize in grief counseling, where they have, you know, really extensive background experience. So if you do find yourself in that position, I think that certainly would be a healthy avenue to take. And of course, there's a lot of self-help books that, again, are written by often therapists, counselors, psychologists that focus on grief.
Well, Well, September is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, and we hope that this discussion will encourage you to be a little more open to talking about the subject and seek help if you or a loved one needs it. Of course, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is available 24/7 at 1-800-273-8255 for anyone who needs someone to talk to. It is completely confidential and private, and it's always there for you. Juan Santos of Santos Counseling in Greensboro, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and information on this vital subject with us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And thank you for listening to Triad Today, a weekly community affairs program on 98.7 Simon.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.